Welcome everyone to the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Boone, the lead fantasy analyst at the Score, and today's episode is presented by Head & Shoulders. Offense for great hair, defense against flakes. Always appreciate you tuning in. I'm excited about today's show. I think you should be too. We've got one of our favorite guests on today, Pat Fitzmaurice, joining us again. And that means we have two of the top five most accurate analysts in the industry this year, because after 6 weeks, I'm sitting in fifth out of around 160 analysts, I believe. Pat is two spots above me in third, which isn't surprising at all if you know him. I mean, he finished second in draft accuracy in 2019. He's always near the top of the list, no matter what it is. One of the best out there, one of my main competitors in that accuracy contest every year, and he is a great dude. I'm always glad to have him on the show. I think he's our second most frequent guest, so we're adding to that total today. You can find him on Twitter at Fitz_FF. You can hear him every week on the Fitz on Fantasy podcast, and if you're looking for those rankings, you can find his at thefootballgirl.com. Pat, welcome back to the show, man. Congrats on being right back up near the top of the accuracy contest again.
Oh, thank you, Justin. Great to join you again, my friend. Always love talking to you. And, you know, it seems like I am kind of the perennial front runner in this accuracy contest, and I can never, like, follow through on it. I'll always finish out of the top 10 every year. I don't know, man. I feel like right now I am the slow-moving tractor trailer on a two-lane country road, and you are the sports car just waiting to pass me once there's a nice long straightaway. So, you know, still plenty of time in the season here. I'm sure I can blow this, you know, little bit of a lead I have over you. So,
well, trust me, I know the feeling. I've blown leads. We've talked about that. I've blown leads several years ago. I was in first and I let it go foolishly. And yeah, and last year I was in the same spot where it felt like every season I was right up near the top and I could never win it. And then finally I got that first place last year. So maybe it's your time, man. I mean, I hope you finish second behind me. I will say that. But, you know, if it's not going to be me, it would be great to see you win it this year.
I do appreciate that, buddy.
Well, I sort of sped through the intro a little bit. Normally I go a little bit longer off the top, but I got a lot of stuff I want to talk to you about today. And we can start with what I think is one of the bigger stories this week so far, that the Dolphins named Tua Tagovailoa their starter. Now, they're on bye this week, so it doesn't matter for week 7, but when they return in week 8, it's going to be the Tua show. You got Fitzpatrick on the bench backing him up, and Fitzpatrick was pretty honest that he was disappointed about this. He was playing pretty well for them so far this season, so I get it, and it's nice to see an athlete be that honest when they're disappointed and not just say the right thing, that they're going to back up the guy and all that sort of stuff. So this year, without a preseason, we've seen some pretty impressive play from these rookie quarterbacks, and that's how I want to frame this. And maybe it's unfair to do it this way for Tua, but for the rookie quarterbacks, so Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and Tua, which one would you rather have the rest of the way in fantasy?
Well, Justin, I would like to say Herbert or Tua, since I have both of those guys in the Fantasy Pros Invitational Dynasty League that we both playing, but yeah. I do have to pick Joe Burrow here. He leads the NFL in passing attempts. He's second in completion. He's eighth in completions. He's eighth in passing yardage. He runs a little bit. The efficiency so far has definitely left a little something to be desired, and I'm sure he's going to get better with that. But and he's also been a little matchup sensitive, I guess we could say. I mean, we saw him really struggle against the Chargers in week 1. In his first NFL matchup, he had to deal with Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram coming at him off the edges, and he had to throw into coverage with Casey Hayward and Chris Harris Jr. We saw him struggle against the Ravens a couple weeks ago, but he's had some pretty good games too, and there are moments when the talent really shines through. I mean, it sounds like a stupid thing to say because we like to be able to quantify things, but I think it really does seem like Burrow has this innate playmaking ability. And I like the design of the Cincinnati offense under Zach Taylor. I like that Burrow has two good receivers in Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins. And I guess even A.J. Green showed a little bit of a pulse last week. So too early to say definitively that Burrow is the most talented of these three guys, but he's definitely talented, and it's hard to argue with the passing volume he's getting right now. But I am really excited about these other two. And I honestly wasn't sure what kind of NFL quarterback Justin Herbert was going to be, because there were times in his final season at Oregon, especially down the stretch, where he just didn't look very good. But Justin, I remember watching Oregon play Auburn early in Herbert's final college season. And man, he threw some absolute rockets in that game. I mean, there was just no denying the arm talent with this guy. Plenty of arm strength, throws such a nice tight spiral time after time. And he's giving Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and Hunter Henry chances to make plays. And not surprisingly, those guys are coming through for him. So he's been a lot of fun. And now we get to see Tua, which is really exciting. I mean, this is one of the most accurate passers to come out of the college ranks in a long time. Just a guy who can zip darts in between defenders when he has to, and who can drop a perfect throw into a receiver's arms 40 yards downfield. I mean, he used to do that all the time at Alabama, just launch these deep throws and place them so perfectly that the receiver never had to change direction or break stride to haul in the pass.
I mean, it's interesting that these guys are all kind of in a similar spot too, right? Like, offensive lines aren't great. They got pretty good weapons around them, though. They can run a little bit. Like, they all could potentially right. flirt with top 15 fantasy numbers the rest of the way. Like, that's not a crazy thing to say.
It's not. And like you said, the COVID year, you wouldn't think this would be a time for rookie quarterbacks to shine. And, you know, Burrow did struggle in that week one game, but he's been pretty decent ever since for the most part. And, you know, Herbert, I think everyone was shocked that he came in basically cold after not even expecting to start when Tyrod Taylor had that mishap with the needle. It's been a real pleasant surprise. I hope we get the same sort of pleasant surprise with early Tua competence. And I do just wish his first game wasn't against the Rams with Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey. I mean, man, that is going to be tough. But maybe the Dolphins figure that everything is going to seem much easier after that.
Well, I agree with you that Burrow is definitely intriguing. I would go with Herbert here, and it's not just because of the weapons. I mean, I know Keenan Allen and Hunter Henry have been great. You mentioned, too, Mike Williams, the last time out, just has a huge game and shows you another weapon in that passing game downfield. He's got that rushing ability that I mentioned, but also he's thrown 7 touchdown passes over his last 2 games, and one of those games was against the Bucs defense, and we've seen what that Bucs defense can do to some quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers this past week. And then coming off the bye here, they get the Jags, the Broncos, the Raiders, the Dolphins, and the Jets. Those are their next games. That is a fantastic schedule. And then in the fantasy playoffs, the Falcons in week 14, the Raiders in week 15, and the Broncos in week 16. So I think there's a lot to like about Herbert. And when I did my trade value chart today, it went up earlier on Wednesday. I had him ranked as a low-end QB1. I think that's where he belongs the rest of the way.
Wow. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, the schedule is really nice for him. It's going downhill. And yeah, the way he did carve up the Buccaneers, and I believe that was in Tampa too, you know, after seeing what they just did to Aaron Rodgers, and the way that they can really get after you with the pass rush. But he, you know, he made some big plays in that one and, you know, got some chunk yardage with some bombs in that one. So, it really is kind of hard to separate those two. It is nice that they both have a quality set of weapons. And I think Tua is going to have that too, with, you know, Devontae Parker kind of looking like a true wide receiver one, Preston Williams, a nice complimentary receiver, Ford and Jakeem Grant as, you know, solid third and fourth guys. So nice that all of these young guys have good weapons to work with.
All right, let's stick with the Chargers and my guy Herbert for a second here. They still have Austin Eckler out for a couple more weeks, at least, maybe more. And in their last game, it was actually Justin Jackson who was the more productive back. He had 15 carries, 5 receptions, 94 yards, compared to Josh Kelly, who had 12 touches, but just 38 yards in that game. Now, it's a very small sample size. It's just the one game that we're looking at. It was against a Saints run defense that's pretty good. So some of it might have been the matchup that might have, you know, impacted their play calling and who was in there and all that sort of stuff. But now with the Chargers having this great schedule starting this week with the Jaguars just got run all over by the Lions, right? So I want to know, how are you ranking these two with Eckler still out? You got Jackson, you got Kelly, you have a fantastic matchup against this banged up Jags defense. Is it one or the other? Is it both guys this week? How are you ranking them?
maybe a little on the conservative side. I have Jackson running back 23 in a half point PPR, and I have Kelly running back 30. So when we last saw the Chargers in week 5, Jackson played 59% of the offensive snaps and Kelly played 35%. Jackson had 20 touches, Kelly 12. And really, the big disparity was in the passing game, where Jackson had 6 targets and 5 receptions, and Kelly just had 1 target, 1 catch. So I think we do have to lean Jackson here. And honestly, Justin, I don't know whether Joshua Kelly is any good at this point. I mean, yards per carry is kind of a flawed stat. We know that. But, you know, Kelly's 3.2 yards per carry is a pretty good indication that he hasn't been able to make much happen since week 1, when he had that 12 carry, 60 yard game, scored his only touchdown. But I do think that in a week with 4 teams on bye, Kelly still might be playable. I mean, the Chargers are up against the Jaguars, as you mentioned. They have been a very soft run defense. I think they've given up the 4th highest total of rushing yards so far. So, you know, sometimes multiple bye teams, a lot of injuries, it's any port in a storm. And, you know, Kelly is probably going to find his way into a lot of lineups this week.
Yeah, I'm right with you there. I have them both in that sort of low-end RB2, high-end RB3 range. And I would be willing to start them both this week, but it's mostly because of that matchup, which we've touched on a whole bunch. And it wouldn't even shock me, as much as you kind of, you know, had some negative things to say about Kelly there, it wouldn't shock me if this week, because of the matchup, they grind it out and he gets more touches and he has the bigger game in this one. Like, I still think that's kind of, it's up in the air a little bit. I'm not 100% sure that it's going to be Jackson as the lead guy the rest of the way. And they're 8-point favorites at home, so maybe they just put it in Kelly's belly and they let him do the dirty work in this one. Lots of backfields that are just kind of up in the air at the moment, though, and I want to talk about some more of them. The 49ers, they waited to get Raheem Mostert healthy. He didn't stay that way for too long, unfortunately. Now he's dealing with this ankle sprain. He's headed to IR. He's going to be gone for at least 3 weeks. Plus, the 49ers have a week 11 bye. So it's possible he could miss the next 4, and then they give him that bye week to heal up. Like, we might not see him until week 12. That's within the range of outcomes here. During that time, we have to figure out what's going to happen in this backfield, because we know it doesn't matter who's getting the touches. In that Kyle Shanahan rushing attack, anybody can produce. When Mostert was out before, it was obviously Jerick McKinnon who stepped up. He hasn't looked as good recently. And then we have the undrafted rookie, Jamichael Hasty. I mean, I stashed him in that dynasty league that you mentioned earlier. I thought I was so smart to do that. And then he was so buried down the depth chart and he was on the practice squad that I dropped him a while back. And then he was out there this week for anybody to get. And I think Mike Tagliere spent like almost a max bid to pick him up. Now, that's a very deep league as well. Like, there's very rarely anything on the waiver wire, so that might explain why he went all out and put the max bid on him there in that dynasty league. But Hasty, he had some fresh legs. He looked like a guy who could potentially take on a bigger role in this offense if they want to give it to him. You also have Jeff Wilson, who missed the last game with a calf injury. He could be back this week. You got Tevin Coleman, who I don't think he's going to be back from the knee injury this week, but maybe in week 8, so he factors in here as well. Just a lot of options, a lot of paths that this could take. Which of these backs would you want to roster the most over this next month or however long that Mostert's out?
Yeah, well, first of all, you delivered some bad news here, Justin, because I put a big claim in on Hasty and was trying to spend a lot of money to get him. I'm very sad to hear that Tags got him to...
it was like 900 and something that he put on him to get it, yeah.
Oh, man. No wonder. I think I was at like 700 something. As someone who's been drowning at the running back position ever since Saquon went on the IR. But yeah, man, I have actually put in a lot of claims in on Hasty across all my leagues because it seems like I'm overweight on Jonathan Taylor and Miles Sanders in redraft this year. So I'm not saying I'm shoving in all my chips on Hasty being the preferred guy, but I'm leaning that way. The Jerick McKinnon usage has just been so weird. Mostert and Coleman both got hurt in week 2. And then in week 3, McKinnon plays about 2/3 of the snaps and gets like 14 carries, 4 targets. In week 4, with Mostert and Coleman still out, McKinnon plays 92% of the offensive snaps and gets 14 touches and 8 targets. Basically his backfield that week. So then Mostert comes back in week 5. He gets almost all the carries. McKinnon plays just a quarter of the snaps. one carry and four targets. And then last week, when Mostert got hurt again, Hasty had nine carries, and McKinnon played slightly more snaps, but only had six carries. So it's kind of tricky. I'm guessing McKinnon's probably going to get the start. I've seen some of the 49ers beat writers suggest that the running backs coach, Bobby Turner, uses kind of a hot hand approach in picking which guy he sends out there in certain situations, which might kind of help explain the weird oscillation we've seen with McKinnon's playing time. But I don't know, Hasty's kind of interesting. I think he's almost Mostert-like in that he's a smaller guy with some speed and a little bit of aggression in his running style. Not one of these little guys like Nyheim Hines who goes down on first contact every time. And he was pretty good at running that zone stretch play that the 49ers like to run when they were milking a fourth quarter lead against the Rams. So my guess is that the way the 49ers deploy McKinnon and Hasty is probably going to be very game flow dependent in the weeks to come. Like this week, if it's a close game against the Patriots, or if the 49ers are playing with a lead, I think we're probably going to see more of Hasty on the early downs and then McKinnon as the passing down guy. I do think McKinnon's going to be the passing down guy no matter what. Hasty just has two targets in two games. But if the 49ers are playing from behind and they are traveling cross country this week to play the Patriots, who are probably feeling pretty ornery after losing to the Broncos at home last week. So if the 49ers do fall into a hole against the Pats, I think we're probably going to see more of McKinnon than Hasty. And Justin, I find it kind of funny that I'm predicting the 49ers backfield to be so game flow dependent when they are playing the team that pretty much trademarked game flow dependent usage of running backs, the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I'm with you on that breakdown. I think you nailed it. I mean, McKinnon would be the guy. If I had to rank them right now the rest of the way, it's McKinnon, then it's Hasty, then it would be Coleman, and then Wilson. I haven't really seen that much from Wilson that gets me excited, but I want pieces of this backfield. I want, and I said this before the season, like, this is why you try to roster as many of these guys as you can. And if, you know, one of them's out there and you can get them cheap and there's a spot in your bench, you use that spot on a 49ers running back because you never know what could happen. And we've seen a couple injuries here, and all of a sudden, a guy, Jamichael Hasty, who was on the practice squad at the start of the season, which is why I dropped him in that dynasty league, all of a sudden now has a shot to get big time touches here.
Oh, I was just going to ask, do you have your rankings handy? I was going to ask where you have Hasty and McKinnon this week. I think I have Hasty running back 32 and McKinnon running back 34, which is pretty wishy-washy.
I don't have them, but I can pull them up right here. I got the score app on my phone and do it nice and quick here. And obviously these will change. We're recording this on Wednesday, so many updates to come here. I have McKinnon at RB 17, and then I have Hasty a little further down. I'm not sure where everyone had him. I'm trying to find it here. I had him at RB 33.
Okay.
So we'll see what we hear coming out. I mean, we've heard a lot of positive things about Hasty. And like you're talking about with game script here, I don't know that the Patriots are a team that's going to pull away from anybody right now. And maybe the 49ers aren't either. But I think at worst, this is going to be a close game. So we should see both those guys get plenty of touches. It's not all bad on the injury front. I mean, we talk about so much of this stuff, right, with Mostert getting hurt. We've had all these wide receiver injuries early in the season. But last week, we got Devontae Adams back. We got Julio Jones back. This week, Michael Thomas stepping back into the Saints lineup. Does it go right back to Thomas being a top five fantasy option in your mind? I mean, or is there cause for concern? Because there are some reasons you might want to be concerned, whether it's the injury itself and is he fully healed, whether it's the team turmoil stuff and him potentially punching a teammate, whether it's the fact that they just have more weapons this year than they had last year, and maybe he won't get as many of the targets as he did last season where he was just dominating the target share. Or it could even be Drew Brees. I mean, the quarterback situation, Drew Brees maybe isn't as good as he was last year. Is there a reason to be concerned, or are you just going right back with Thomas as a top five guy?
I guess I am pretty much going right back to him. Had they been a little less conservative with his recovery time, I think I might have been more cautious, but I feel like they have given him a pretty ample time to get over the high ankle sprain. So yeah, I think he's wide receiver 4 for me this week. And I do realize that the Carolina pass defense has been one of the best kept secrets in the NFL this year. The Panthers are only giving up 6.1 yards per pass attempt, which is a pretty great number. And the last time I checked, I think they had three cornerbacks with top 40 coverage grades, according to Pro Football Focus. And that includes Rasul Douglas, who is probably going to be the one covering Thomas most of the day. But we know how hard Drew Brees leans on Michael Thomas. I can't imagine him getting fewer than 8 or 9 targets this week. And 13 or 14 targets wouldn't surprise me a bit.
So I was probably conservative with this one because I think in my initial run I had him at wide receiver 10. And part of that is with the injury that he had, and I love the fact that these teams are being cautious, that we're seeing Davante Adams, you know, get held out that extra week, and then they bring him back so he can be 100% healthy and not risk re-injury there. And it seems like they're doing the same thing with Thomas. But when you're talking about these high ankle sprains, I'm still worried that he's not going to be the same coming back. So that's the only reason that I think right now I might be being a little bit too conservative on it, but I'm holding him back just a little bit. And I also want to see, because this was one thing that I was, I'll say concerned, but I mean, this was the reason that I had put Davante Adams above him in my rankings before the season. And it was because I saw Davante Adams as a guy who was in the situation that Thomas was last year, where he was going to get all the targets on his offense. And now Thomas had to deal with just a few more mouths to feed and maybe wouldn't get the exact same kind of target share, just bumped down a little bit. So I want to see that as well. So when you factor all that stuff in, I got him probably a few spots, maybe lower than I should, but that's where I got him for now. We'll see when I keep going over it here if I can get a little more confident and bump him up over some people. Lots of offenses in flux right now that we're trying to assess, that we're trying to adapt to. I will admit that I was off with my Cowboys projection last week. I don't know how you did with that one, but I didn't think Dalton would replace Dak, but I thought he could give him 75-80% of that passing production. And I guess he sort of did that by the end, but it wasn't pretty. It was mostly garbage time. What I got wrong was I underestimated just how bad that offensive line was. And it didn't help that Zach Martin, who was basically their last healthy quality starter on that line, he gets hurt in the game and leaves as well. So things just got even worse there. I mean, you have Travis Frederick retiring before the season. You have both tackles already injured. Now Martin goes down and Dalton is not the best under pressure. So I whiffed on that one a little bit, but you also just had this disaster scenario, right? You had Zeke fumbling twice. You had Michael Gallup dropping that touchdown. If Gallup catches that touchdown earlier in the game, maybe things go a little differently. So I don't know. I think Dalton's going to get more comfortable over time here, but we have to bring our expectations down, or I have to bring my expectations down a little bit, I should say. So where do you think that this leaves these Cowboys skill position players? They're going up against Washington this week. Is there hope that even without Dak Prescott, that they're going to get on track? And, you know, these guys who basically are all fairly high-end fantasy assets, that they can continue to produce? Or are we doomed to have a little more inconsistency in this offense now?
Oh, I think we're definitely doomed for inconsistency. And you pretty much nailed it with the offensive line woes, Justin. I mean, losing Tyron Smith and Lael Collins for the season, your two starting tackles, as you mentioned, the one remaining stud, Zach Martin, has the concussion. I think his status is still kind of up in the air. They've got a rookie center, Tyler Biadasz. This is going to be tough. And the one thing that the Washington football team does really well is puts heat on the passer. Like, that is a pretty fierce front seven that they've got now with Chase Young and company. So real problems there. I mean, we know Dalton is no Dak Prescott. He's an average to below average starter and kind of always was for most of his time in Cincinnati. He has nice weapons there, but as it was, I mean, I guess the allotment of target was not as much of a concern when it was Dak Prescott throwing, you know, these high efficiency targets and a lot of them because they were playing in these turbocharged game scripts. I mean, what happens now when it's the drop off from Dak to Dalton and you've got these three receivers to feed? So I couldn't get any single Cowboy receiver into my top 20 this week. I think Cooper is my highest at 21, and then Lamb at like 25, and Gallup somewhere in the late 30s, maybe. I'm not as worried about Zeke because I think they lean on him pretty hard. The efficiency is probably going to go down, but he's still probably going to be a pretty good bet for a touchdown most weeks and probably 20 touches. Yeah, it is pretty bleak here, and I think, I don't know, I don't think you're trusting Dalton as a weekly starter, maybe a spot starter in the right matchup, and you're definitely feeling the pain if you've got any of these Cowboys receivers and we're relying on them in your starting lineup every week.
Well, let's talk about the other side of the field in that game, because I feel like Washington, they almost got a bit of a breath of fresh air with Kyle Allen giving them just reasonable quarterback play, right? You didn't have to come in and be a superstar. You know, it wasn't great against the Giants last week, but he got the job done. 280 yards, two touchdowns, one pick. Not great, not terrible. I guess that's how I would look at it. So this week he gets this Cowboys defense that's giving up the ninth most fantasy points to quarterbacks this season. They've given up 330-plus point fantasy weeks to three of the six quarterbacks they've faced this year. I don't know if you're desperate enough to have to start Allen anywhere, but are there any players on that Washington offense? I mean, it's probably not Allen unless you're streaming or in a two-quarterback league or something, but are there any players in that Washington offense that you feel confident in this week and maybe the rest of the season as well?
Well, I'm pretty willing to start Terry McLaurin any week. I mean, I think this guy is pretty wonderful and maybe even a top 10 talent at wide receiver in the league. And, you know, for all the whatever Ohio State chemistry we might have attributed to the Dwayne Haskins-McLaurin combo, I think Allen might actually be the better fit for him in some ways, because even though I don't think anyone would say that Kyle Allen played well with the Panthers last year, but the one thing he did was really float DJ Moore's value when he was playing there. And yeah, so I mean, he might be good as far as propping up the value of his number one receiver, and clearly McLaurin. I mean, he's the only game in town at wide receiver in Washington, basically. So he's someone you can absolutely start. And then running back is kind of interesting because they might have two possible starters, at least in a week like this where they're playing a really bad defense. I mean, we just saw the Cowboys get demolished by the Cardinals in their running game this past week. You know, I do think that in some ways people are maybe underappreciating Antonio Gibson and overappreciating McKissick a little bit. I mean, Gibson, I think, is going to be a pretty special player, just that combination of size and speed and open field moves. And McKissick, I see, is just kind of a competent passing down back. But the Washington has been really protective, it seems like, of Gibson as far as his workload. Like every game they've played so far, he's had between 9 and 13 carries. Every game so far, he's had between 2 and 5 targets. It's just been a very managed workload. I think he's played fewer than 50% of the snaps and fewer than McKissick. So, but I get it. I mean, the Washington offensive line is bad. It's near the bottom of the league in Football Outsiders adjusted line yards, run blocking metric. I kind of like what Scott Turner, the offensive coordinator, has done as far as trying to get Gibson touches in space, like little screens and trying to get him outside rather than just slamming him into the offensive line. So, you know, there's a little bit of a ceiling there because of the usage, but, you know, you don't need more than 12 or 15 carries to do a lot of damage against the Dallas defense. So I think he's playable. And then as much as we have seen McKissick factor into the passing game with, like, you know, 6 to 8 targets most games, I think if there's a PPR component in your league, you can throw him into your lineup this week.
All right, we won't spend any more time on that Washington offense. I was just curious about some of those pieces because the matchup with the Cowboys. What about this Gronk resurgence that we've seen recently? Early in the season, he wasn't doing that much. Bruce Arians and Gronk basically told the media that he might just be in Tampa to be a blocker. I don't know if they were purposely trying to throw us off the scent there, but we also had OJ Howard get hurt. And then Gronk seems to have taken on a bigger role in the passing game since. 24 targets over his last 4 games, been a top 7 fantasy tight end during that time. Are you buying Gronk as a tight end 1 again?
Boy, he's almost there.
That might say more about the tight end position than it does
really
about Gronk,
does.
Right?
It really does, man. After the top 5 or 6 at tight end, it's just such a hellscape. But he has had, over the last 4 games, 7, 3, 6, 8 targets. So You know, he's averaged 9.4 yards per target over his last three games. So he's been functional, man. I mean, he looked pretty spunky against the Packers last week. And I think it's one of those situations where if you have a bye or an injury at tight end and you can have Gronk as a fill-in, you're pretty happy about it. But if Gronk is your only tight end, or if your other tight end is someone like, I don't know, Chris Herndon, I think you should probably start trying to figure out a more permanent solution. You know, and again, when you've only got like 5, 6, maybe 7 real dependable tight ends, that's easier said than done. But I guess one thing that's encouraging is that I was worried it was going to be sort of a like a weekly split between Gronk and Cameron Brate. And it's pretty much been mostly Gronk the last 3 or 4 weeks.
All right. Another player that I have just been crushed on this year is Kenyon Drake, because I had him ranked very high before the season. So a lot of people listening right now, they drafted him, and many of them, Pat, they were not very happy with me over the first month or so of the season. And then this week, he blows up 164 yards, 2 scores. The real problem for him, he's been getting the volume on the ground. He hasn't been getting the receiving work. He's been getting the volume as a rusher, though, and I kind of pointed people to that. Now, I already took the L. I said, listen, I missed on this one. I totally accept that. But now, and I, you can tell me, because you're going to be the voice of reason here. Am I just trying to convince myself of something that isn't there? Is this the perfect sell high time maybe for him? But I've been thinking recently, before the season, when he hurt his foot, and he said, don't worry, everybody, this is the same thing that happened last year. I was in a walking boot, and I was fine. But if you remember last year, in the first half of the season, now part of this was he was in that Dolphins offense, but he was not very good in the first half of the year. And it was around the middle of the season when he got traded to the Cardinals, and then he went off. So now I'm thinking, wait, was the foot part of the issue? Because he didn't look as explosive early in the season. And I don't know, I know it's a one-game sample. You know, he had the big run near the end. Maybe he looked a little bit better in that game, I think. But are we going to see a situation where maybe he's getting healthier? Maybe the foot was part of the problem that slowed him down over the first part of the season. And yes, it doesn't look like he's going to get the receiving work, but if he can still get the bulk of the rushing work in this Cardinals offense that I think is going to only get better as the year goes along here, maybe we see Drake be a pretty solid running back too. I don't know that he's ever going to reach that RB1 level that I hope for him, but he could be a high-end RB2 here. Or am I just crazy? Was it just a game against the Cowboys and everything went right for the Cardinals and this is the perfect time to sell high on Drake?
No, I mean, I think that's kind of it. Well, first of all, interesting observation about the foot, and it's possible that maybe he, as he gets a little further removed from that injury, we do start to see the efficiency tick up, because I guess that would be our main complaint about him, at least until the Dallas game, where he quickly gained ground in those efficiency numbers in a hurry on a couple of big runs. But yeah, there's like no such thing, I think, as a minor walking boot thing, for as much as people try to downplay that. But I think maybe people were kind of a little too high on him pre-draft. I guess I was, I don't know, and I still probably had him at like running back 11 or running back 12. I guess I was a little nervous that he had never had a full season of RB1 production. You know, and it's easy enough to blame Adam Gase, but that was under two different regimes in Miami. You know, and then we only saw it for like half a season last year. But now I think maybe people have kind of boomeranged and they are being too low on him. I mean, yeah, we didn't see great efficiency with him. We're not seeing any passing game usage. 8 targets, 6 catches, 22 receiving yards so far. And, you know, it's, you're sailing upwind when you have to do it all on the ground. But he is getting 17.5 carries a game so far this year. And his 105 carries ranked 5th in the league. And the Cardinals have really shown no inclination to change roles. I mean, he is the early down guy. Chase Edmonds is the late down guy. And as much wish casting, I think, as a lot of fantasy managers have done, trying to project Chase Edmonds as a, you know, possible, you know, this lottery ticket who could take over that backfield. Like, we haven't seen any sort of movement by Cliff Kingsbury to go in that direction yet. So I still think Drake has, you know, high-end running back 2 value, probably. Maybe mid-range running back two value. So I don't know if there's anyone worried about an impending job loss for Drake and looking to deal him, and you need some running back help. Like, I wouldn't be opposed to buying him right now. And if you do have a little bit of a surplus at running back, I think you could sell him. I've seen him in a lot of deals lately because I think there is sort of this range of perceptions on him. And whenever you've got people with these wide ranges of perceptions on players, I think those are the guys you see in a lot of deals because, you know, that facilitates it when not everyone sees a player the same way.
Well, people can always check out my trade value chart and the score if you're trying to figure out what you might be able to get for him or what you might have to give up to get Drake on your team at this point, whichever side of the coin you fall on there. I want to ask you about another guy that had a really big game in week 6. Now, he didn't find the end zone, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire just crushed the Bills in week 6. His problem has been that he hasn't scored since week 1, though. Now we have Le'Veon Bell showing up, and it seems like everything we're hearing is making it pretty clear that even Le'Veon Bell himself is saying that he's okay going there and just being part of the backfield and not having to be the guy this time in that Chiefs offense. And we don't know how long it's going to take Bell to get up to speed. You know, we've seen this with Leonard Fournette, right, where it could take a little while before they know the offense and before the coaches feel comfortable putting them out there in every situation. But I'm curious how you see Bell fitting into this Chiefs backfield this week against the Broncos. I mean, like I said, we don't really know how much work he's going to get. And then long term, the rest of the season.
So as of now, I'm maybe leaning towards thinking that Bell is going to be like a Daryl Williams plus. Like, he's going to be the backup, and, you know, maybe he's going to be there in there a little more dependably on passing downs. And maybe he gets a few more hot hand touches. Like, if he's got things going on a drive, maybe Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy keep him out there a little longer. What I'm curious about, Justin, and I honestly have no feel for how this is going to go, is who the Chiefs have in there. If it's first and goal at the 5 or second and goal at the 6. Like, I don't know who they're going to be using in those situations. And I think that is really going to be telling as far as the fantasy value of these guys going forward.
Yeah, and in my mind, it puts Edwards-Helaire, as good as he looked in that last game, it puts him into that sort of high-end RB2, mid-range RB2 range. And then I'm with you that Bell is, you know, a Daryl Williams plus, right? That he's right up there. It pretty much, I think, could be a flex option once he's completely up to speed in that offense. I don't know how long that's going to take. So I wouldn't want to trust him in my lineup this week. If you put him in your lineup this week, you're hoping that he's the guy that's going to get the goal line work and that he's going to fall into the end zone, because I don't think they're going to give him that many touches right away. They just don't really have to, right? So I think it might be a week or two before we see him get any sort of significant work. And even at that point, I'm guessing that it's going to be like at best a 60-40 split, probably 65-35, something like that, with Bell getting less touches there. But even with that, that's probably better than him getting most of the touches in the Jets offense, as sad as that is to say. We'll finish up with the same question that we ask every week at the end of the show. Which player or players, if you want to name a few, are being overlooked for fantasy in week 7? The floor is yours, Pat. Who you got?
All right. I don't know about overlooked. I would say that, in fact, maybe this isn't even a good answer for this question, but I think I've got him higher than some other rankers do with DeAndre Swift. And I know people are pointing to the fact that he still didn't get even 50% of the snaps for the Lions last week, yet he had these big numbers. But I think what's exciting about his performance last week was that he is now not only getting the valuable passing down touches, the targets, the receptions, but he is now, like, he looks like the back of choice inside the 5-yard line. Like, Adrian Peterson was watching from the sideline while DeAndre Swift was getting those touches. So if he's getting, even if he's getting this limited snap share while the Lions continue to give Peterson his work and even mix in Kerryon Johnson, Swift is still potentially very valuable if he is just dominating the high value touches for the Lions, the receptions and the goal line work. So Plus, he's got a very nice matchup against the Falcons this week. You know, he's a guy, I think, again, with the four teams on bye and all the injuries, like, you can feel pretty good about throwing Swift in your lineups this week.
Yeah, I love that call. That's the thing that I like about this question is you can kind of take it in any direction. Sometimes it's guys who are higher up your rankings that you just think aren't getting enough respect that week. Like, I think I mentioned David Montgomery last week as a guy just because he had the great matchup and everything, and it didn't turn out exactly as I had hoped, but he still had a pretty good game, right? I think this week right now for me, I'm looking at the Bills backfield, and I know I'm a Bills fan, so you know, take it as you will, but Devin Singletary, Zach Moss, I think they're both excellent plays this week. I know the Jets run defense used to be one of like the lone bright spots on that defense, on that team, really. Not anymore. New York has given up the fifth most fantasy points to running backs. The last two teams they've faced, the Dolphins, the Cardinals, their backfields put up over 150 yards from scrimmage in each game. The Bills are 13-point favorites this week, so they're going to be able to lean on that rushing attack, making Singletary a low-end RB2, Moss a pretty intriguing flex option there. A little deeper down, we kind of touched on him earlier, so I won't say too much, but I do think that J.D. McKissic, as much as you don't want to trust him as like an RB2 or something, if you're desperate on these bye weeks, what he's done over the last few weeks, he can be a flex play for those teams that really need somebody at running back. And we know with the injuries and the bye weeks, it can get pretty thin at running back, but 84 yards from scrimmage last week, 49 the week before, 46 the week before that, 52 in week three, 53 in week two. So he can give you something. There's not really a great ceiling there, but he can be a guy that you can throw in and just be that fill. And he's caught at least six balls in each of the last three games. So take that as you may. At receiver, DeSean Jackson coming back means he's right into that upside, you know, low floor, but high ceiling, flex range type of play. Just takes one connection for him to make that happen. Same thing for Marcus Valdes-Scantling. He had some solid days early in the season. He had 45 yards in three of their first four games. And then he had that letdown against the Bucs last time out. But pretty much everybody on that Packers offense did. So I wouldn't be scared to fire him up as sort of a desperation flex as well. And then at tight end, man, it is thin, like we said. But Eric Ebron has at least 40 yards in three of his last four games, coming off a down week, so people are going to be off of him. But the Texans just gave up 85 yards and a touchdown to Darren Fells, so Ebron has that touchdown upside, maybe more in that one. And then in deeper leagues, you could go to the opposite sideline and go for Anthony Firkser, who, if Jonnu Smith ends up missing this game, and I still kind of think he's not going to play this week, the matchup is a tougher one against the Steelers, so Firkser would be a volume-based play for week seven, but we saw him get a ton of volume last week. Nine targets, caught eight of them, 113 yards, and a touchdown there. So those are some options, and like I said, that's what I love about this question, that you can go with some of the guys near the top, you can go with some of the guys near the bottom. It's who's being overlooked, who's being disrespected. It's kind of all that boiled into one. And that is all for today's show. Like I said off the top, make sure you're following Pat on Twitter at Fitz_FF and listening to the Fitz on Fantasy podcast and checking out his rankings and his content over at thefootballgirl.com. And Pat, this was awesome, man. I expect nothing less at this point. Always appreciate you coming on, dude.
Oh, hey, Justin. Thanks for having me. Great time talking to you as always. Be well, my friend.
I'll be back on Friday for our weekly video chat at 1 p.m. Eastern. Until then, though, big thanks again to Pat. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening, and we will see you next time.
Said leave on time, my baby, said leave on time. Leave on time with me tonight, said leave on time.